Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Here we are again. It's that time. Insane in the Membrane. Coming at you. I hope you're well. As I always say, you know what? It should be a given by now. I hope you're all well. This is why we do this, because I want you all to be well. It's been all right my end. Doing all right. Getting stuck in, getting things done. You know, not letting the black dog get in there too much. You know, like sometimes the clouds will, you know, descend and squash us into the duvet, but we do our best to brush them aside and just get on with things, don't we? My guest this week is Robin Hatcher. Now, Robin Hatcher is part of the Noise Next Door, the comedy troupe, the improv troupe. They're good lads. I've known them for a few years now. Robin joined the boys a couple of years ago now. Orange Noise. Because he used to wear different colour ties so you could differentiate between who was who, like sort of like they're like Power Rangers. And Robin's part of that. They're a really good bunch of lads, and we really have a lot of fun when we work together. It's really cool. And Robin came on. He messaged me a little while ago to do a gig for the MS Society, because Robin, unfortunately, had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I was shocked because, you know, somebody that I knew, I've never been around someone that's been diagnosed with something like that before. So it was quite a shock. And then I was like, do you know what? Come on the podcast and talk about it, because I'll learn something and people listening will learn something. We're going to put a link up to the MS Society in all the promo stuff for this. So if anybody's got any questions or they need to speak to somebody, the link will be there. Just click on that. That'll take you where you need to go. And it was a really lovely, informative chat. You know, he's not letting it get to him. He's a very positive dude. Anyway, every time I've worked with him, I've been around him, he's just full of life. And, you know, so here is Robin Hatcher.
I had a meeting the other day about a corporate thing we're doing through Zoom, and about halfway through I realised, oh shit, I've got a top on, but I am just wearing my pants underneath that.
I always get dressed, I have a shower, get dressed and things like that, and then I saw time was getting on and Jade was doing something on the laptop. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just leave it for now, just leave it. But now I'm like, no, go and have a shower, get dressed. So I did. And now it does. It makes you feel better. It makes you feel like it comes out in your voice. You can hear it.
Yeah, that's right. It's starting the day, isn't it? It's like when you see, I don't know if you see many like online gigs or, you know, all of those sorts of things, but we've started trying to stand up when we do them. Because if you're like sitting like slouched on a sofa, I just find I'm so much lazier. Because I'm like, no, this is just me chatting to the boys. There's no, you know, no audience here. But
yeah. I always do it sat at my desk. So at least I'm
sure.
I'm in the office space.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice. Yeah. No one needs to see me stood up, though. I'm not very tall, so it doesn't look like I'm standing up anyway.
You can start doing the Ola thing of like taking a stool on with you. That's like, rocks that.
Just dragging it nonchalantly on behind me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although I did a gig the other day and I jokingly said that, yes, I am wearing a hat, but I am naked from the waist down. And there was these two women and they looked at each other, rolled their eyes, and I ended up standing on my stool going, I'm joking, look, I've got my trousers on.
Yeah, this is where my dick should be and you can't see it, guys.
But give me your mobile numbers and I'll...
Have you been doing many sort of like online bits, Rich?
Do you know what? I avoided them for a bit, but now I'm kind of getting my head around them. I feel I don't wait for any laughter. I just kind of just talk.
Yeah.
And then people will message back and go, I enjoyed that. And you go, okay, cool. I think you've got to sort of aim for interesting rather than piss funny.
Absolutely. And like that sort of feedback of people like sending you a message just goes such a long way, doesn't it? Because you haven't got a clue how it's been.
No.
Yeah.
I've just been doing similar material, but just as a story. So, which has been really nice, actually, just because you can add bits in that you don't normally add, because normally you're kind of rushing to get to the punchline, trying to keep it sharp and snappy. But I treat it like I'm like I was reading a story to the kids, you know, like kind of trying to keep it interesting and like make sure your voice goes up and down in the right sort of places. And,
sure. Good characters, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm actually starting to enjoy them, which is nice.
Yeah. No, that is good. Yeah. It's a different skill set, isn't it? For sure. Like for ages, we did a few sort of like actual gigs. We've done a couple. But we sort of developed sort of more like a chat show format. So we're doing like a live stream once a week, which has actually been really fun because it means that we've been trying stuff out, which we'd never dream of putting on stage. Because we'd be like when you're having the meeting, you're like, is this a bit shit? Like if the answer to that question is maybe, then it can go in the live stream.
Yeah, exactly. You do tend to be able to get away with a bit more. I mean, we're getting away of ourselves, Robin. We should say
this.
Save
this is good
gold.
Stuff.
I was recording it all. I was just going to say, this is going out on the 30th of July. So, of course, all the comedy clubs will be back open then. And let's not date the conversation too much. I'll turn me off then.
Well done, producer.
Cheers, Paul.
Cheers.
He's a good lad. He's very good at what he does. And I'm very pleased that he recorded that. That was excellent.
That's
the thing. There's no big introduction. I say this to everybody. There's no kind of welcome to this. It's like, do we just get on with it? Because as you know, once you press record and do the big intro, people kind of change. And
then absolutely.
You go into gig mode and that's fine. But I quite like to just kind of ease into it. And then just nice and easy. And then the words seem to tumble out a bit more.
Do
you know what I mean?
Different style, isn't it? It's difficult for comics to do that sort of like we're chatting about. This isn't me on stage being like Robin the performer. This is me as like just the guy that I actually am. So it's a weird sensation, certainly. So yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's like, you know, we're mates, so it's nice to have like a mate chat rather than all like two performers performing at each other. And also, like, people talk about someone said to me the other day about this podcast, they go, well, it's not really about mental health. I'm like, well, it is. If you listen to it, it's actually, there's no point in us sitting here talking about actual mental health. But what we do is it's people telling their stories and how they overcome certain things or how they deal with stuff in their life. And that, I think, is more helpful than just sitting here listening a load of, you know.
I totally agree, man.
Going over
it's not a therapy session, is it? Yeah, it's not a therapy session. It's a different vibe. And like, as people know, like, you know, men are worse at chatting in sort of therapy scenarios. That's because that's just not something that's traditionally been something that we do. But going down the pub and having a chat with your friends is always, it's like, you know, tale as old as time, really, isn't it? Like, that's the way that people, men and women, deal with mental health issues on like a day-to-day basis, I guess.
Yeah, so. True. And it's funny, you don't realise how important those things are until they're taken away. You know, we've not been able to go out for ages and just little things like, you know, oh, I'm going to be in town. Oh, good, I'm in town. Let's meet up, you know, go and have a coffee or whatever. Just those simple things. You don't realize how fucking important they are,
mate.
You know, I've missed it
through this lockdown. It's just been like it's obviously getting better now. Like we're starting to ease out of it, and you know things are starting to open. And we like when they announced that you could go to the park and like see your mates. Like even when it was just one other person from another house. So I recently I've been living alone, and so for the first 10 weeks of lockdown, I didn't see a single human apart from in the supermarket, and. You don't realize it because you just get on with it. Like you just like, you know, all right, whatever. I'll get some writing stuff done. I'll, you know, buy some paintings. I'll do a jigsaw puzzle, all of that stuff. Make like 100 fucking banana breads just for me. And then you don't realize until, you know, 10 weeks have gone by and you're seeing somebody for the first time. You think, oh, this is literally the first mate I've seen in the flesh for all that time. So
yeah,
it was it's a funny, weird time.
Do you know what? Because just before the lockdown, Jade and I were really struggling together. We were going to couples counselling. Well, we still are, but it was just one of those, you know, you get to that point in a relationship where it gets a little bit tense and your every utterance seems to just piss the other person off. And we were genuinely like, do you know what? We might just fuck this off. I was like, do you know what? Maybe that's what I need to do. Just get somewhere on my own, have my own stuff around, live on my own for a bit, get my head together, blah, 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 blah. And then after the lockdown, I'm like, fuck, I'm really glad that I wasn't on my own. I don't know. It would have been fine to begin with, but I think I would have gone off the rails a little bit. I don't know if that was the same with you.
Well, yeah, to start with, I was like, this is fucking brilliant. I was just waking up whenever I wanted, like 6 p.m. would come around. I'd be like, well, now I'm definitely having a beer. Like you just stroll around the house in your pants, do whatever you want. But then, after a while, you start thinking like, oh God, I just want to do something normal. So I got really into exercising. Like that was like, I've always been like relatively active, but never like I've never enjoyed it. Like it's always been something I'm like, oh fucking, all right, I better do this. You know what I mean? But I got really into it because I was like, this is the only thing that I structure my day around. So it stopped being about like, oh, I'm seeing, you know, my buddy Ed later on today. And it started to be cool. At this time, I'm going to go for a run. And then that was it. Mm. So by the end, I was going out of my mind. But yeah, like you said, it's one of those things that like everyone was in it together. It didn't feel like it was just me. So you can get on the phone and you can speak to your mates who maybe you've not spoke to for quite a while and be like, oh, I wonder what he's up to or I wonder what she's doing. And it didn't feel like weird, like you were intruding on their everyday life. It just felt like, oh, cool, Robin, who I've not seen in 5 years or whatever, has given me a buzz. Let's have a chat. And I quite enjoyed that side of it, I suppose. How have you found like everything easing? Because I found that pretty much as bad. Because I'm constantly like, oh shit, should I be doing this? Like, I really want to do these things, but like, should I be? Or am I making it worse? Am I part of the problem? I don't want to be part of the problem. And that's just been a bloody nightmare.
Yes. And it started because I was pretty zen about everything that had gone on. I think I've said this before on a few other episodes. I felt because, you know, I'd been working really hard for 15 years. And in the last sort of five, I'd reinvented myself, really got stuck in. People started to take me seriously as a comedian and I was like, it was really going places. I'm like, oh, brilliant. Like Soho Theatre was about to happen. Stuff was going on. I was like, oh, it's exciting. And then within 20 minutes, it had all gone. And you're like, oh, fuck. And I was pretty zen about it at the beginning. I was like, well, this is how it is. It's not just me. The whole world is in crisis. Let's figure this out. Let's keep calm. And it was really nice. Like you say, you're reaching out to people. People reaching out to me. We were all chatting. I was talking to people I've not spoken to in like 10 years. I spoke to my ex-wife. We were just chatting and it was all nice. And then now it's starting to ease up and we're going back out. And now it kind of shines a light on the fact that all of our work got taken away. And, shit.
Yeah, that particular side of it's been like much worse, I think, for like the last couple of weeks, isn't it? Like, because, you know, as things start going back and like, you know, like my mates who work in normal jobs can slowly start easing their way back into work, you realize that actually we are going to be like the very last people who get anything like our normal life back. And that's a weird feeling. And like, it's kind of weird talking to your mates about it because, you know, I've got friends who've been back at work, or a lot of mates who are teachers. And so they've been pretty much working the whole time.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like, oh, it must be nice though. You know, you've got a 6 month holiday. And you're like, well, yeah, but also this could potentially be a 5 year holiday. So how about you shut the fuck up?
Yeah. And I can't pay my rent.
Exactly.
You know, there's been bits and pieces money wise here and there, but you kind of, it's a weird one. It's especially, I'm 48, so I genuinely am unemployable. It's like, but you look at the stories and you look at what's going on and then you kind of, I remind myself, I'm like, well, do you know what? It could have been a whole lot worse. I've been really lucky. I haven't lost anybody to the virus. I know people that have, and I know people that have, family members have been really ill. So you kind of go, you know, do you know what? It's one of those things, you know.
That's it, man. That it could have been worse. I'd say that's like my lifelong mantra, pretty much. Like whenever something goes a bit Pete Tong, like that's generally like, oh, well, it could be worse. It could be this. It could be that. And I'm yet to find a situation where I can't apply that logic to it, or I can't go, oh, I could, like, you know, I've never reached a point where it's like, well, no, this is literally as bad as it could possibly be.
This is the thing. That is an incredible mindset to have, and especially bearing in mind what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. You've had some horrible news.
It's been a bad few months. So I got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis back in November, it has been a tough 6 months in that sense, because I got diagnosed in November, and then about 2 weeks after my diagnosis, I also happened to have a hernia operation booked in. Just completely by chance, you know, nothing to do with it at all. And then I had that fixed, and I was in bed for 2 weeks. And so what that meant is that I got diagnosed and then immediately stopped living my life. I couldn't work. I couldn't see, like, obviously I, with the noise next door. So we're a group and we do everything together, and you very, very quickly, they become your, they're my support network. I see them most days. And I couldn't do any of that stuff. So I was just lying in bed thinking, well, cool. I've just had this diagnosis. I can't do anything. And then it was Christmas. And then we did a few gigs in sort of like the early part of the year. And then Corona happened and I was locked down again. So like that process has been a bit odd. But one of the good things to come out of the lockdown is that like it's given me some time to come to terms with the MS diagnosis and like how I want it to be, like as a person with MS. Like that's going to be me forever now. Yeah. And so I need to learn how to live with it rather than letting it rule my life. I'm just not going to let that happen. So having this three-month period of time where, despite all the other stresses, I could just focus on that was actually kind of useful.
Yeah, you must have really gone through every single emotion in that time. It must have been... What was happening? Did you know there was something going on, or did you just feel... Because I know the basics about MS, fatigue and things like that, but what was happening? Tell us.
Sure. Listen, if I get boring, I'm like an encyclopedia.
No. You just. This is your space.
All right, mate. Yeah. Where to start? So about a year ago, maybe just over sort of like beginning part of 2019, I was in Barcelona with the Noise Boys and also with Laura Lex and Rob Deering was there as well. They were doing some gigs out there and we just tagged along. The Noise just tagged along for a little holiday. So we were out there having a lovely time. And then sort of out of nowhere, I got this thing, which I now know to be called the MS hug, which is like a tightening around your midsection. And I was like, oh, that's weird. It feels like I can't breathe properly, but I don't know what that is. And then it went and I was like, oh, it's probably just a muscle or something like that. And then about a month later, I started to get in my left leg, just a feeling as if somebody was pouring warm water from about halfway down my thigh all the way to my foot. Because the fatigue, whilst I do get that, I've always been a really tired, sleepy person. I love sleeping. I love napping. And so that was like, hey, cool. I'm just a bit tired than normal. So I went to the doctor about that and I had some MRIs and stuff. And I had... MS is characterized, there's a few types of MS, but my type of MS is called relapsing remitting, and it's characterized by attacks. And basically what happens is the way that they sort of describe it is if you imagine a wire and you imagine the plastic sheath that's on a wire slowly gets stripped away until the copper is just left inside. That's basically what happens to your nerves. So your immune system attacks your nerves, strips away the outer sheath, which is called myelin, and then that's why people sort of suffer with walking difficulties and things like that. So I was very lucky because the symptoms you get are dictated by where that attack happens on your spine or in your brain. And so like there's sort of like 30 different symptoms you can get with MS, but I only get at the moment a couple. And I was very lucky that the first one I got was incredibly obvious, because a lot of people get sort of very, very subtle symptoms when they first get it. And that means it's really hard to notice. You don't go to the doctors if you're like, oh, do you know what, my ankle feels a bit weird, if it feels a bit weak or it feels a bit slow, you could just be like, oh, well, I've pulled it playing football, or I've fallen over or whatever it might be. So I was very lucky. So I went to doctors and had a few MRIs and they found my first lesion, and then they were like, it could be, a lot of people get this, if you're recovering from an infection, then you get one lesion. It's called a clinically isolated incident. And it basically could just be that happens once and loads of people have it. So they were like, if you get anything else, anything new, come back to us and we'll have another little look. I think that they sort of expected to palm that off for some time, because most people that would be years. But for me, it was 2 weeks. So 2 weeks later, I went back with new symptoms and they put me through another MRI, and then I got diagnosed. After they have to there's like a board they have to talk to, because they can't just issue the diagnosis. They have to take it through a board of specialists and all that sort of stuff. So it took a few months to get diagnosed once they found the second lesion. But that was in November, and that was it, really.
Wow. How did you feel? Because you, Because obviously you knew something was, well, you knew something was up, but you weren't sure. And yeah. How did you feel when they told you?
Well, it's another one of those ones that, like I said, when you think it could always be worse. A few fun things happened. So basically, like my neurologist called me actually. So normally they would call you in for a meeting, but I am really glad he didn't. I'm glad he called me because it meant that I could start my treatment really, really quickly. So I've been put on treatment immediately. Whereas it would have been 6 months before I could get a neurology appointment, but it's 10 minutes to make a phone call. So he called me and a few things happened. Like the first thing is he went, he told me I had MS and like that sort of knocked the wind out of me a little bit. And then he was like, I just want you to, and he was like, this is going to sound a bit weird, but I want you to know that, that this is actually a really good time to have MS. And I said, doctor, you do realize that sounds fucking insane. And he was like, oh no. But yeah, he was like, well, what I mean is, and then he sort of explained that, you know, like scientifically we're a long way further forward and all this stuff. Yeah, so he told me that. And then, oh yeah, the other thing I was sort of thinking about, like, could it be worse, basically? And he said on that phone call, he was like, this phone call was either going to be me telling you you have MS or me telling you you have spinal cancer. And when you hear it in that way, you're like, cool, I got the better option. Do you know what I mean?
So,
And it's been a process because I've always been very fortunate with my health. I've never had any problems. I'm, you know, pretty healthy guy, apart from the fact that I now always will have this.
Well, I say every time I've seen you, you're always running around. You're always full of energy. Even on stage, you're like, you're just like this really, this puppy just running around, just eager, just like, yeah, let's do some stuff. And you're like, whoa. So when you told me that this is, you've been diagnosed with that, I was genuinely like, fuck, man. You know, it just goes to show that, yeah, you can look after yourself to a certain extent, but there are just some things that you just can't predict, you can't plan for. And man, yeah. You know, how did you feel when you after the phone call?
So I was actually back at my family at my nan's house for just a little bit of work. I've got like hundreds of siblings, and my younger brother Zach is in year 11 at the school that I went to, and so I go there and I teach a few improv workshops a year, just as like a little bit of side stuff, just you know. Yeah. And I was there just doing those for that week, and I've got the call on the Tuesday, and I had to go back in on the Wednesday and Thursday and stuff, and I knew that Zach was around, and at that point, my stepdad, who is Zach's father, was like death door ill, really, and like he has since passed away. I was just, oh no, you know, he's been ill for quite a while. So basically, I was aware that I didn't want to like be that bad in front of Zach because he had enough going on. He's got his GCSEs coming up and all of this stuff. So I actually just weirdly like I just put it on hold for a few days, and then I went to my dad's house. Just to see him, and my dad's a neurologist, like a biomedical neurologist, and so he knows about this stuff, which is really useful. But I felt like I absolutely broke down for like 3 hours, I'd say. I just thought, because you hear MS and you think, well, that's a disability, that's it, I'm gonna be in a wheelchair, I'm gonna, you know, you see the people who get MS and it develops to a very, very serious point. It does happen.
Yeah.
But it is actually comparatively rare. And so at that time, though, you don't see that. You just see the worst possible scenario, and you see that the burden you're going to become on your family, the lack of work that I'm going to be able to do, like the losing all of any form of, you know, comedy and stuff like that, because it's not a hugely accessible job. Although I have sort of since changed my opinion on that. But that's how the first few days went. And then I got really like I've been really pissed off about it at times, like really annoyed, because like you said, like I do try and look after myself. I've always tried to be quite healthy, and I don't smoke or drink to excess, or like, you know, I try and exercise and eat well. And I was like, what the fuck what was the point of that? like you see people who, you know, and like I got really annoyed, and then you think, well, that's not fair, is it? Like, you know, people live the life they want to live, and I wanted to live a healthier life. That's fine. But I got really annoyed about that for a while. And then, yeah, sort of as I've come to terms with it, it's just sort of more and more become, okay, so how do I just live my best existence with MS? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it was lucky that you were looking after yourself by the sounds of it, you know?
Yeah.
It sort of gives you a head start on it, if you will.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. Cause like then when you start looking at the science and stuff, and also fuck me, like the NHS, I know that they've been in the news a lot recently, but I just had a slight head start on my love for them because they are just phenomenal. I've never felt so incredibly looked after. Like I've got five nurses and two neurologists, all of whom respond to me within 2 days if I've got something wrong with me. I've got like two community nurses and three medication nurses, and they've just very quickly become a huge part of my life. Like these people who were strangers, you know, 6 months ago. But yeah, one of my nurses sort of said when we were talking about, you know, the science of it, there are things you can do to slow the progress of the disease. You can't stop it, but you can slow it down. And one of the things is keeping fit and like active. And she said exactly that. She was like, yeah, you've got a bit of a head start on that, which is good.
Excellent. So. I tell you what, it blows my mind. I've recently found out what it takes to become a nurse, how much it costs to become a nurse. And it shouldn't cost anything. It's mental that you have to pay for that.
Yep.
And two, the fact that they're not respected, like this thing now, they're being charged again for parking, and they're
getting, yeah, I saw this.
You're like, fucking hell, man! If you become a nurse, you should get everything. You shouldn't have to worry about anything. You're doing an incredible job, taking care of people, taking care of us, and yet there's no respect. And yet, you know, again, and there's always that. You know, they're sort of like, you know, footballers get this, that, and the other, and it's all that. But it's just. It blows my mind, man.
They're taking the piss out of, because it's a passion. Like, you have to be a certain sort of person to be a nurse. You have to be caring and loving and warm and compassionate. And you are those things regardless of whether you're getting paid or not.
Yeah.
And like, so they get the piss taken out of them because they will always be compassionate and caring and loving. And so therefore, people go, well, they'll do it anyway, won't they? Like, people in power, they'll do it anyway. We don't have to pay them, which is such bullshit. It's just insane.
No, no. Well, it's like when Boris was ill and Boris was going on about how great they were and this, that, and the other. And he just knew. He just fucking knew he was never going to do anything like to look after them. He was never going to be like, do you know what? I changed my stance on this. I think, you know, we should invest this and do that. And he's just turned around and just fucked it off.
Yeah.
Because those people are just, they're more worried about staying in power and backing the people that want to privatise the NHS. And, you know, it's all about the money, and it really sickens me, you know?
Yeah. Well, obviously the election came last year, like the general election came just after my diagnosis. And I was really concerned about the NHS, obviously, because I've always, of course, been pro-NHS, but it puts a bit of a finer point on it when you're suddenly know that you're going to be reliant on it forever, like every month. So I go into the hospital every single month and have drugs. So I have like an infusion. It's called Tysabri. It's quite a serious drug. It's like on the top end of the MS drugs. And in America, it's $7,000 an infusion.
Fucking hell.
Like, I couldn't even afford one.
What are you supposed to do? You're just supposed to be just ill. Because I know, because like someone else was saying about this, they were going, yeah, but they'll just bring in health insurance. And then, the amount of times I've heard stories where they go, well, yeah, your insurance doesn't cover it. You're like, what the fuck? What are you paying for then? It's insane.
I use the MS Society has been amazing. Like, it's such a great resource. And they've got like a forum on there of like people from around the world, but predominantly England, but around the world, sort of talking about, you know, every element of it. It's both, it's sort of like, you know, carers, and it's also people with MS and people who are newly diagnosed, like the whole spectrum. But there are sometimes people with MS from America who come on, and often like the more effective treatments, because there's about 10 drugs you can have for MS now, where 10 years ago there were, well, 12 years ago there were none. So like, it's really, really developing. But the more effective ones are obviously the more expensive ones, and quite a lot of people with MS in America, their insurance just won't pay for it.
Mad.
So, and you can't get insurance once you have a lifelong condition. So I couldn't get insurance anymore, which is just like, well,
what are you supposed to? Yeah, exactly. What are you supposed to do? Just walk into the sea. This world we live in, where, well, I've said this before. I mean, the world is run by five old white racist paedophiles. So until they get out of the way, we're all a bit fucked.
Yeah.
I know it's not great, but at least you're here.
Absolutely. And like, and you know what? It's fast become. Like, I'm really pleased with how quickly I've come to terms with it and how quickly I'm happy with it. Like, also, like, it started to be quite a lot of fun, because like if my girlfriend's ever around or whatever, and like, obviously I mean, you know, everyone who knows me, I'm fully fit. I'm completely capable, but it is fun to be able to use it sometimes. Like, sometimes my girlfriend will be like, oh, Robin, could you know, make us a cup of tea? And without fail, every single time, it's a bit, she absolutely loves this bit. I just fall over and stay there. and she'd be like, what are you doing? I'd be like, babe, my MS is flared up real bad. Just then, when you ask that tea, it's...
Do you know what? I'm really looking forward to when it actually does flare up, and she just leaves you on the floor. She'll just go, whoa, you've called wolf once too often.
Yeah, that's
I'll make
true.
My own tea. As she stands on you to reach the kettle.
Yeah, yeah.
But are there? So I suppose you don't know. You don't know how badly you'll be affected, I guess.
No.
Affects everyone differently.
Yeah, it's the worst. It is the worst thing about MS. Like, you can't plan for anything. So there are three types of MS. There's a type called primary progressive, which is often, and whenever you talk about MS, whenever you say like often or normally, there's always exceptions to the rules. It's never 100% true, but often primary progressive MS is diagnosed in older people, and often it tends to be a more aggressive form of the disease.
Right.
I have a type called relapse and remitting, which 85% of people who get diagnosed get. And then after about 10 to 15 years, if left untreated, it will normally about 90% of the time develop into a type called secondary progressive. And basically my type is characterized by these attacks I was saying. But once you reach secondary progressive, it stops being attacks and it just starts to be a steady downhill slope. So you will just get steadily more disabled. Unfortunately, they don't know. There's no indicators. There's no things you can do to find out how bad you'll be in 10 years' time, 15 years, 20 years. You just have to hope and live as healthily as you possibly can. And there's various things they sort of recommend. Like, the one thing they can say is they're like, if you smoke, stop smoking. It will make it worse, which I didn't. So that's okay. They also sort of suggest that you eat less saturated fats. So, like, I eat no red meat anymore, which, again, it doesn't really bother me. Whatever, you can have chicken. But yeah, it does. That's a worry. Like, the worry is that I'm 28 now. So in 10 years time, I could either be exactly the same, completely mobile, or I could be completely paralyzed. Like, that's entirely possible.
Oh,
it's unlikely, but it's entirely possible.
I suppose it's lucky you've got that mindset of I don't know you that well, but you seem to me to be very sort of glass half full. Which is nice.
Yeah, I certainly try to be. You know, I think you've got to be, really. Like, when you're dealt an illness, and I can't speak for people who have illnesses which are sort of like, you know, like cancers and things like that, which are very, very, very serious, but hopefully curable, and if not curable, then fatal, which is a horrible position to be in. With MS, like, you get it, and it's like, okay, so I have two options. Either I do it and I just live my life and try and do it well, or I die, like, I stop. And like, that's not an option, really, is it? So
no,
that was it felt like, and my dad was really good at this, like, he was sort of like, you haven't got an option. Like, right now you're absolutely right to feel sad and worried and scared, but you haven't got an option. You have to just live through this and crack on. And it was really good advice, really, like, because he's right, you do.
Well, yeah, it would be so easy, and no disrespect to anyone that's listening and has done this, just to go, fuck, and just let the depression engulf you. You know?
Absolutely,
I totally get it.
And people with MS are sort of statistically, and, you know, there are figures you can find which are sort of, people with MS are far more likely to suffer with things like anxiety and depression and, you know, other mental illnesses, because it's just a constant thing. Like, there's not a day that goes by where I don't think, oh, cool, I just ran down the stairs really fast there. I might not be able to do that tomorrow. My MS could flare and that could be it. I could forever use the use of my right leg. It's unlikely. Like, all of these things are, you know, you'd have to be quite unfortunate with MS for that to happen, but it is entirely possible. I think my main thing has been, like, with MS, that I want it to be, like, people to know that it's not an old person's disease where you see people who are really, really unwell, and it, you know, people get that, and it, as you get older, people do get that, but it's really, you're diagnosed in your late 20s and early 30s 9 times out of 10. And yeah, it's, I think people think of MS as something that's very visible and very obvious, but actually most people with MS have entirely invisible symptoms, so you wouldn't really necessarily know unless they said so.
I was really keen to get you on to talk about it, because I know of it and I know people know of it, but I don't know what it must feel like to be diagnosed with something like that, and the uncertainty of, now there's an uncertainty to your future, and I know for a fact that that would fuck my head up.
Yeah, the uncertainty is the hardest thing, 100%. I'm very lucky because I've got, just like, I mean, I'm sure everybody listening, and I hope everybody listening, and, like, you know, has got, like, a support network, people who they can rely on, and I have come to rely on certain people in such an enormous way. And some of the best advice I've received is from my, just from my mates, who just sort of, they just see you through, and it separates out your friends a little bit. Like, you have moments in your life, I think, where you realize that, oh, these are friends of mine, but these are good time friends. Like, these are friends who I go to the pub with and have a real good laugh with. And then you get a small group of, like, you know, 10, 15 friends who are like, these are the people who I will be with for the rest of my life because of the way that they've dealt with this incident. It means you end up like loving people way harder because of how much they've done for you in your time of real need. It's not just
you're really lucky to have good people around you, mate. That's, you know.
Yeah, I am really lucky. Yeah, and I don't, I, God knows what I would have done. Like, if I didn't, if I was in a position without that, it would have made the whole process way harder. And people choose to deal with getting diagnosed with something like MS in different ways. Some people don't want to talk about it and don't want to go public with it and want to keep it to themselves, which I completely respect. Like, I think live it, it's your disease. Do what you want with it. Yeah. The way that I felt I could best deal with it for myself is to talk about it to my friends. And then moving into it, I was like, the best way I can help other people with MS is being like a comic and out on, you know, stage and stuff. Like, I'm quite good at talking. And so I was like, it makes sense to try and shed a bit of light on it because some people won't want to or be able to do that. So I just felt like that would be a good way for me to help a little bit, you know, the community and stuff
absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's again, that's why having you on, because I don't know anything about it. I know other people probably don't know anything about it. Actually talking to someone that's like I say, has literally just been diagnosed, and so you're still, you've just sort of in the process of dealing with it mentally, and like you say, you've had, it's funny, isn't it, that you've been sort of plunged into it, but you've had to sit and think about it because there hasn't been any choice. That's quite a good thing, the positive thing that's come out of this lockdown.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that, again, I sort of try and focus on that and be like, that's a good thing. It's been a horrible couple of months, and like, obviously there's so much stress and anxiety surrounding, I mean, and also not just lockdown stuff, but the world in general feels a pretty bleak place right now. And it feels like there's so much that needs fixing urgently. And so like, when I get a bit overwhelmed and I'm feeling like, oh, this is, everything is shit. Like, everything that seems so obvious to me and everybody who I know, whenever that starts to get a bit overwhelming, I sort of try and think like, cool, well, the positives for at the moment though, what have I got that's positive? And this sort of coming to terms with this disease has been it, really. Well, I had sort of like loads of different shielding advice. I don't know, I think I heard on another episode that you were chatting about, Jade's had some, because Jade's asthmatic, is that right?
Yes.
So has she had like shielding advice and stuff like that?
As soon as we heard what was going on, Jade just hid herself away.
Yeah.
And that was before lockdown was even talked about. It was just, you know, the guidelines were, if you can avoid it, don't go out, keep away from everybody. And then, so she straight away just went into lockdown mode before it gone on. So, and that's what we did. And then when they announced the lockdown, it was like, oh, good, we did the right thing, you know.
Absolutely.
So I suppose, you'd be more vulnerable.
Well, this is it. Like, I've had, since lockdown, I've had 6 letters each saying different things. So, like, I had a shielding letter, and then I had an ignore that shielding letter, and then I got a letter from the council saying, you're vulnerable, stay at home. I've had so many different bits of advice. And so I ended up going to my nurse, who is absolutely amazing. Her name's Anna, and she's just been brilliant. She's like, she feels like a mum now. And I was like, Anna, what's all this? And I like, took all the paperwork in, and she just took it all and just put it all in the bin. She was like, don't worry about that.
Anna,
you'll be fine.
Yes.
Yeah, Anna's sick. She was like, don't worry about that. Like, the thing about MS is like, because it's such a spectrum condition and people can be so seriously affected, there are people with MS who would be very, very seriously vulnerable to it. Mm. I'm just not there yet. So I guess I understand why they sent the letters, because better to be safe than sorry. But it didn't help the certainty, do you know what I mean?
That is funny though. And I'm glad Anna was around. What a legend. Just like,
she's
give me that. So Anna, if you're listening, well fucking done. So
also, she did another funny thing when I went for an infusion at, like, mid-lockdown. Obviously, we were doing the NHS clap and that was really, really good. And I went, my infusions are actually Friday morning. So I went in straight after the NHS clap on the Thursday. Friday morning I went in. And I walked in and I was wearing jeans for the first time throughout the whole lockdown. And I went, guys, listen, I think it's really good that we're clapping for you, but, and sort of pointed at my jeans, and they all clapped. But then what happened as I left, the whole ward, all of the nurses stuck their head out and gave me a round of applause. And basically Anna had gone and told them to do it.
He's wearing jeans. Yay! Yeah. Like,
I don't want to say I'm a hero, guys, but listen, I wasn't in my pajamas, so.
not all heroes wear capes. Sometimes exactly. sometimes they wear jeans.
Yeah, exactly. No. And, mate, listen, I've put on some weight in this lockdown, so they were tight. It was not comfortable.
Just, do you know what? At the beginning of the lockdown, so halfway through, I was trying on some stuff that I hadn't worn for a while. And I'm like, I'm getting into this. And then because of that, I think I went mental. I just blew all my hard work. I just got stuck in. Do you know what? You're right about the world being a bit fucked. It does feel like someone's pulled the thread and it's now unraveling. You know, now everything, we're all, and what's worse is that we're arguing with each other. Everyone's fighting. It used to be that you could, you have a disagreement, but it seems to be quite totalitarian on both sides.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everyone's no one's really, no one's prepared to sort of debate anything. It's like, right, we on the left are right, so you need to listen to us. We're the ones. And then everyone on the right going, no, we're right, and you should listen to us. And then,
yeah.
But nothing's happening. It's all just shouting and hollering, and just doesn't get anywhere.
And then, like, I've been reading stuff. I've been trying to get, the trouble is that there's so much going on that I want to be informed about it before I have opinions, right? Obviously, everyone's got opinions, and certainly people I hang around with support things like the Black Lives Matter movement and trans rights and things like that. However, I don't claim to be educated enough in those arenas. I need to know more before I can fully articulate my arguments to people. So I don't get involved. I'm not gonna, if somebody tweets something that I disagree with, I'm not gonna get involved because I don't know enough. And I would be worried about that. Obviously, if it's like things like be anti-racist, that feels like something you can do. That feels like, yes, I will start that straight away. If I hear it, if I am around it, then that's something you can say, guys, that's not acceptable. Like my family, I don't know if you've got this, Rich, but like my family are like, they're not racist at all. But some of the older members of my family say things that are completely accidentally. And like, particularly my nan, for instance, like she's forever saying things that you're like, nan, what you've just said is completely unacceptable. And then you explain to her why it's unacceptable. And she goes, oh, you're right. I hadn't thought of it that way. And you go, cool, well, that's the job, isn't it? That's the thing you should be doing.
Yes. But the older generation, because they're used to saying certain words and, you know, you have to kind of go, yeah, you can't. I remember my nan, she's a lovely lady, very open-minded, not racist at all. But the terminology she would use would be wrong. Like, I remember she said, you know, coloured people. And you go, hey, nan, you got to, you know, and but it... But it's out. I remember being outside, and there was someone being a cunt on a train.
Really?
And I just said, and I sort of said, I went, wait, you know, pack it in. And then, but no one, everyone was so scared. No one was.
Yeah.
And I just suddenly felt like, oh shit, I'm gonna get my head kicked in here.
But yeah. I've never seen it. I don't think. I mean, that's it, isn't it? That's why I'm more fortunate than a lot of people in the country, is because I have never experienced this. I don't think I've ever seen it in real life. I've got a friend of one of my really close mates is a gay chap, and I've seen him get stuff thrown at him and like got involved when that's happened. Sort of like, you know, insults and things like that. Cause it was at Pride actually. And it's like, well, don't, why are you insulting somebody at Pride of all places? Like,
at Pride.
Yeah. At Pride. It was ridiculous. But like, I don't know, I guess I feel very fortunate.
Throwing things at him because he was gay at Pride.
At Pride, yeah. So like, it was utterly mental. I mean, like, we were sort of like on the way to, but we were part of like the big, like, yeah, we were obviously going to Pride because it was Pride.
Yeah.
Utterly ridiculous. But yeah, I guess like.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're looking for a sponsor to help get this brilliant conversation to an even bigger audience. Sponsoring the show, as well as a promotional trailer, means that your message and our message will be inserted into some of Acast's biggest podcast titles. Get on board and partner with Insane in the Membrane. Go to pauldaniels.tv for more information.
The thing that I'm struggling with at the moment, mainly, it's been everywhere in the last couple of days, is this cancel culture thing. Like, how does that, I don't know.
I know people, you know, once you publish something, you know, you're that's it. Then like this J.K. Rowling thing, everyone's like, canceler. It's like, but she's entitled to her opinion, be it right, be it wrong. And it's an opinion, and opinions are neither right or wrong. They're opinions. But no one's discussing anything. It's all, like I just said earlier, it's like, you say the wrong thing, that's it. You've got to lose your entire life. You have to be completely wiped out from the face of the earth. You know what I mean? Sometimes people, you know, it goes back to being uneducated, or not uneducated, but ill-informed. Let's say that.
That's the word, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, ill-informed. And you say the wrong thing because that's where you're at that time. But instead of people going, actually, mate, if you have a read of this, and then see how you feel. And 9 times out of 10, you'll go, oh shit, yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah, exactly. You're right. Yeah, you're right. Or they'll go, no, I still stand by. There's no room for debate or discussion. It's just...
Which is scary, right? Like, I find that terrifying. Yeah, yeah. I think, like, I don't agree, like for instance, the J.K. Rowling is a great example. I don't agree with what she said. I think that, like, full stop. Like, and I find it difficult to articulate that because I'm like, I haven't got an intelligent argument to back it up. My argument is just, if you're a trans woman, you're a woman, that's it. It's not... But... I find cancelling somebody like that, just refusing to engage with it, I worry that that's going to lead to a generation of people who may be a bit younger than me who just won't argue, they won't debate, and therefore nobody is going to change their opinions. Nobody's going to learn to be better. Imagine if some of the more, you know, the prominent civil rights movements and all the stuff that happened, you know, years ago. Imagine if they'd just been cancelled. Then that would never have happened. And I think that's so problematic.
And you're right. Back then, it would have been people, you know, not what, like, people still believing in segregation and people still believing that being gay should be illegal. You know, and they were in the majority back then, those people. So, yeah, if this had been happening now, yeah, you're right. Segregation would have continued. You know, being gay would have still been illegal.
But then in comedy, obviously, we're our bubble, and I'm sure yours is the same. I've just got this beautiful, lovely left bubble where nobody's homophobic, nobody's transphobic, nobody's racist, nobody's sexist, and everyone actively tries to be better on things. Like if you're shit at something and you don't quite know enough, everybody is trying to learn more, and that's brilliant. But that means that I end up going, well, it's fine, isn't it? The world's like this.
I think all you can do is because social media only goes so far, you know, especially Twitter seems to be a lot of virtue signaling and, you know, oh, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And you're like, yeah, well, that's good that you're doing those things, but you've got to do them in real life. So
yes, absolutely.
You've got to go on the marches, and you've got to go to Pride, and you've got to be decent to the people around you, regardless of the color of their skin or their sexual orientation. Just be decent and do your bit. That's that. You need to physically do things, you know.
And listen, like, as well. You know, I think, like,
and
listening.
Yes.
Like, me and you, like, we're both white, straight men. Like,
we're illegal, mate.
Yeah. It's the time where people like us just need to listen. Like, I've got, you know, black friends who say, well, this is how it is for me. And I'm not in a position to go, yeah, but is it? If they're saying that's how it is for them, if they're saying that's their experience of the world, then that's their experience of the world. Yeah. I need to listen to that and get better at noticing when those things are happening, acknowledging my situation that isn't like that, and therefore trying to equal the playing field a little bit, you know. I know what you mean about the social media stuff, though. I find it it's just uniquely stressful, isn't it? The social media, I hate it. Like, I was listening to your episode with Pierre a while ago, actually, and the thing you were talking about don't get up and look at your phone straight away. I was like, do you know what, Rich? You're bloody right, mate. And
it's true.
I've stopped since then. I've charged my phone in a different room. Like, I'm just not having it. It's stressing me out too much.
I promise you, if you just get up in the morning and make yourself a cup of tea or a coffee before you do anything else, or when I had a personal trainer for a bit, and his advice was get up in the morning, you drink a pint of water with some lemon squeezed into it, and you don't even have to don't even run. You can just go for a fast walk for half an hour, 20 minutes. He said, and that will set you up for the day. You know, regardless of the weather, don't look out the window and go, oh, it's pissing down. Just go. And then come back, and then you can then you can get involved with the arguments.
Yeah, the exercise. I mean, like, all right, just saved, like, completely saved my mental state through lockdown, and it's, you know, it also coupled with the MS stuff. It's like, this is my body. I'm fucking. I'll have it. I'll do what I want with it. Thanks very much. And like, if my legs feel a bit weak or I'm feeling a bit shaky, then fuck off. I've got a run to do. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that sounds like a wise guru that you have.
Well, this is it. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I do, I'm trying to, but I don't follow my own advice nearly enough. You know, I've got all the answers, like, oh yeah, go and do that and go and do that, but I struggle to do anything, especially now. You're kind of like, you know, the dark clouds ascend now and again, and you just get crushed, you know, because of everything that's going on, and not just because of the lockdown, but because, you know, you look at the proportion of, like, when I see, like, Black Lives Matter, and then I see some prick going, yeah, all lives matter. I go, yeah, but you're not going to get killed if you go for a run. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about, privilege. And it breaks my heart when you just, the stories that are coming out and still continue to come out of people getting killed because they're trans, because they're black, because they're gay. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is wrong with people?
And, like, I don't understand how you can, anybody, any reasonable-minded person can argue that. Like, that's just a fact. That happens.
Yeah.
And so you can't go, but. No, there's no but. Like, I saw an amazing tweet, which was I can't remember who it was, but somebody tweeted, and all it said was, black people are out on the streets saying, please don't kill us, and there are still people saying, but. And I was like, yeah. It's mad.
Man. Yeah. And it just goes to show, people just don't get it. They just don't understand what this means. Like, you know, when Quincy was on last year on the podcast, and we were talking about it then, you know, the fact, and he told a story about being, you know, driving his son to Saturday school, and they got pulled over because he was in a flash car with dreads, and it meant that they didn't go to Saturday school, it just went home. And you're like, yeah, that would never happen to me. It would never happen in a million years. I can drive my car after 10 p.m. at night unmolested. I can be any area I please, and nobody will bat an eyelid. And that's the difference, isn't it? And that's where we can make changes. Like you say, we have to listen and we have to do our bit, you know.
And bring it up when you see it. If you do see it, bring it up. Like, don't. I was in a work meeting a while ago. I'm not going to name any names, but it was one of those classic comedy things where, also bearing in mind that I'm in a 4-man male group, right? Mm-hmm. So when you put us on a bill, there is a sway, right? We have no women in our group because we don't want to be on TV anyway. But like, yeah, basically what happened was we were doing a thing where we wanted voices, and we needed basically there was one woman in the group, and they were saying to her, who do you think should be in this particular section? She said, completely correctly, she was like, well, to be honest, I think I should be in every single one of them, because I think at least 50% of these voices should be female. And all of us straight away were like, yeah, absolutely, they're absolutely right about that, that's exactly what we need to be doing. Frankly, can we get some more women on this project? And the response of the producer was, oh, there's just no budget for it. And in our heads we're like, guys, come on. And the reason they've hired the Noise Next Door, if they have got a low budget, is because you get four for the price of one. But like, it's not acceptable. That's not an acceptable reason. Make the budget for it. That's it. If there's no budget for it, don't make the project unless you can make it diverse and make it, you know,
But they talk about diversity, and then you look behind the scenes, and that's where real diversity needs to be happening. It's not, it's all very well saying, oh, we need to get black people into this project and we need more black people for this project. And you're like, yeah, but these are all white people saying all this sort of thing, and now you're getting white people going, yeah, we need more diversity. But what they're doing, they're more worried about their own jobs. You know, no one's kind of going, where we need more diversity. I tell you what, I'll step aside for a bit and the system, it always comes back to the system.
Yeah. What you're saying there, I read in the sort of George Floyd aftermath, I committed. I was like, well, I'm going to learn some stuff. So I've read some books, as many as I can. I'm sort of still trying to do more. But I read Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race by Renny Edio-Lodge.
Yes.
And there was a section in there about, it's called Fear of a Black Planet. And it's this idea that there is, within certain sections of white society, there's just this fear that by providing equal opportunities, we will end up in the position that white people have systematically put black people into for so many years. Yeah. And it's basically a nonsense argument of a reason why you can't do that. Why, oh, no, we can't make sure it's diverse because people are scared. It's nonsense. Don't be stupid. Like, the more diverse and brilliant the culture is, then the more jobs there'll be for everybody and the more opportunities there'll be for everybody, because everybody will flourish.
Exactly.
Yeah,
go on.
I was just going to say, I don't know enough about it. I need to get better. I need to learn more. And so I guess anyone listening, if anyone's got any recommendations, please get in touch. I would really like to learn more.
for both of us.
Like we're
two straight white dudes. We're doing what we can. And what people don't understand is that equality means as well as, not instead of. And
exactly.
I know I've said that before. And that's what, like you say, it's fear, isn't it? It all comes back to fear.
And every single group that's ever been oppressed in any way, that oppression then stops, it only ever leads to positivity. Like, so you look at in the feminist movement, like, I'm not saying that it's equal footing between men and women at the moment, but like, for instance, just even looking at women getting the vote, that's obviously led to positivity. Every single time you do things that an oppressed group stops being as oppressed, it leads to better lives for everybody. And I don't know. It's just...
No, it's true. It's absolutely true. It's that... And women make the world a better place. I mean, they are... I'm not saying... That sounds patronising to say it that way, but women always... They just bring a touch that, you know, men just don't have. Men are sort of like blunt instruments, whereas women have a bit more... Seem to be a bit more...
Yeah.
They have a bit more subtlety about them and a bit more, they're able to sort of figure things out, whereas men just like want to smash it or fuck it or eat it.
The big three, the smash, the fuck, eat trilogy. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you mean. The trilogy, yeah.
It's going to be my next three Edinburgh shows. Smash it, fuck it, eat it.
Yeah, but I want all the jokes to be about the same things over those three separate years. I'll direct it, good.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm up for that. I think we just need to talk to each other a bit more rather than shouting and screaming at each other. And
that's it. Well, because I was raised by my mum. Like, I lived in a single parent family for years and years. And so, like, the idea that women aren't, like, I saw my mum choose to feed me rather than eat when we were growing up, when I was growing up. And like, seeing that strength, that fortitude in somebody, and then the fact that she's a woman was never, like, the fact that she's a woman and I'm a man never played into my mind at all until I reached my teenage years and became aware that that's a thing. Like, I just saw this incredibly strong human being providing for her son. And like, you know, you learn about the economic hardships and all that stuff when you get older, and you sort of, I found out what my mum was doing when I was a teenager, and you think, fuck me, I didn't even know. I was 7 years old and I was just la 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 playing football out on the, you know, my mum was, one Christmas, our boiler fell through the ceiling, completely fell through. Like,
hell.
Yeah, two days before Christmas. And we lived in a little council estate in Essex, and it fell through the ceiling. And my mum spent ages building Santa Claus legs to put out of this hole in the ceiling, so that I wouldn't notice that it was freezing cold. I just thought, oh, Santa goes there. And like, so to hear this argument that women are in any way inferior to men just boils my blood, because the strongest people I know, all of them, are all women. So
I've said this before many times. I wouldn't be who I am without the women that have been in my life. I've been quite difficult to live with, because I haven't sort of dealt with my own shit. And, you know, I've got a selfish streak in me that is really, I combat all the time in a relationship. And And all every woman I've ever been out with has gone, look, you know what? You're a decent dude. Why are you being such a prick? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it took women to point that out to me, to turn around and go, because they didn't just write me off and go, you're a cunt, fuck off, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
They went, you're being a cunt. What's going on?
Yeah. You know, do you find that that advice has helped you sort of like, you're aware that that's a thing that you now do, and so you can sort of try to counteract it if you see that within yourself?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I remember being with my ex, Marilyn. She's, you know, she, I wouldn't have even been in comedy if it wasn't for her. She was, she's a fantastic woman. But I remember she used to say to me, she got quite self-centered. And I always go, no, I'm not. I do loads for people. But she didn't mean selfish. She means sometimes you sort of like think about yourself rather than, you know, other people. And it was only till later on when we split up, I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I get what she meant now. You know, so that's it. And like you say, with your mum and everybody, that we wouldn't be who we are without the women that have been in our lives. And, you know, I don't know why. Well, I do actually. I think men try to oppress women all the time because they're, like, again, they're scared.
It's that fear, isn't it?
They're losing power, isn't it?
Yeah. Which is, again, it's that fear that just ruins everything. It ruins any form of like progress that you can make. The fear that somehow by giving something away, you're making your lot worse. That it's just not true. And you know what? Sometimes temporarily it is. Like at the moment, I suppose, for if you look at white men in comedy as an example, things like panel shows, right? There are less jobs available for white men in comedy. And that's right. There should be less jobs available for white men in comedy because for 30 years, we had way too many jobs.
Now
we've just got the right amount of jobs.
You know, mad, isn't it?
So, yeah, and I just don't see that as an argument where I would ever have a problem.
No, that's it. You have to... This is all part of the process, isn't it? It's how we do it. This is an example of how we do our bit, is recognizing that and going, no, you're absolutely right. We don't need to be doing everything. There needs to be more. It just makes, even I've said this again. I know I say I've said this before loads of times, but I'm just worried that people are going to hear it and just go, oh, fucking hell, he's always repeating himself.
Again, he always says that.
But I think I've said this before, more than
smash
I actually
it, fuck
say.
It, eat it. Yeah. Yeah, you have said that before.
Smash it, fuck it, eat it. I'm going to put it on a t-shirt. That's where I'm merch. Like, you're damn, I'm feeling sexy. I'm going to do it. Smash it, eat it, fuck it.
Yeah. No, sorry, mate. What were you going to say?
But yeah, we have to, I think, like you say, we this is how we do our bit, isn't it? That learning and just recognising that we've had it good for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what I was going to say. We need... especially British people, we need a little bit of cultural appropriation. Not I don't mean it in that literal sense, but we need a bit of a mashup, other influences from other places. Because imagine if we didn't, everything we eat would be boiled. It would just be fucking boring. It would be
some of the best bits of this country are the bits that are amazingly culturally diverse. It's incredible. Yeah. Some of the and where that works, and it should work always, but where it does work really, really well, parts of London, it's just amazing. I love it. Like, you're walking around and that you can see supermarkets from five different cultures, all from where you're standing. And I think that's incredible. Like, yeah, I'm going to have something from this Lebanese shop. Sure. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to try my best. I don't know. It just makes life richer. I grew up in Egypt for quite a bit of my childhood. You sort of get, my mum, once we were past the period of time where we lived in that particular council house, my mum married a guy, my stepdad, who had a really, really good job. And so he was traveling internationally for work. And so we went and lived with him for a bit because why not? And I lived in Alexandria. Wow. And it gives you sort of like an understanding of like, Christ, this is great here. This is amazing. It's so different. Like, you know, you get off the plane or whatever, and you can't even read the road signs because it's not even in your alphabet. And it gives you a real understanding of this is England, and the UK is such a small part of the world. There's so much more out there, and it's all got incredible things to offer. And I want to see more of it. And that's why I love those parts of London where you can experience different culture within the UK. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, it's brilliant. Absolutely. That must have been like you've just said, that was quite the leap from your boiler disappearing through your ceiling to...
Yeah. And in my head, it must have happened. Like, it must have happened in a period of years. But in my head, it was overnight. Like, I really remember, like, the day before we left for Egypt, I slept on the floor of the new house that my mum and my stepdad had bought. That was the first house. Like, I don't think we owned the previous house, but, you know, I slept on the floor of it. And I remember being like, this place is just amazing. And it's just a normal house. It was just like a normal person's three-bedroom house. But it was just, I remember being like, this place is incredible here. This is absolutely amazing. And then the next day I was in Egypt. And I have no memory of that coming to pass. I don't remember anything around that. I just remember we had a shit house. Then we had quite a good house for one night. And then I was in Egypt and had a really nice house for a few years. And then I came back to the normal house and now life is just normal. But yeah, I don't know. In my head, it was three separate days and it was, you know.
You've had quite the life by the sounds of it.
Well, it's been boring since I was in, you know, year 11. But that comedy, you're so lucky when you work in comedy. You get to just do such cool stuff. I love traveling around the country and meeting folks. And like just before lockdown, we did the, you know, the Punch Drunk gigs up in Blythe and Ashington.
Oh, lovely. Like yes.
Just
love
it feels,
those gigs.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like you feel like they've absolutely smashed the feeling of it being like, this is a community event. Like everybody comes out and you get to know everybody. And it feels like you're just, remember when you were a kid and you used to do, I don't know if you ever did this, but like shows in your living room in front of your parents, that sort of thing. It just feels like that. Cause you're like, these people are all our mates. Like straight away you walk out on stage, and I love it. And yeah, like that sort of like community feel that comedy builds is just so unique to comedy. And I love it. I just think it's fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I'll be looking forward to getting back to it. I mean, we will. You know, this is, I know it's different now and it won't be as we know it or as we knew it, but it'll rise again. There'll be a way. We'll figure it out.
It will. Sure it will. And it's going to be a challenge and it won't be the same. But yeah, I think like, you know, the fact that a lot of theatres, small like receiving art, like houses and art centres and stuff have got this financial package really helps because it means that like if they can stay open, they can run nights. Now it's the comedy clubs that I'm worried about, like the specific comedy clubs. And like, you know, it would be such a loss if, well, every single comedy club that closes its door is a loss to the people who go to it. And I think people underestimate how many people that is. Like,
oh God, yeah.
You go to like, I don't know, you do like a little rural gig in Warwick or whatever, and you turn up at this village hall and there's 300 people in it. You think, this is amazing. Like, so every single one of those promoters and those gigs that can't run anymore, that's a tragedy. But like you said, it like will rise from the ashes and it will.
Yeah, we'll find a way. And what about you? Your plans? Are you just taking it day by day or?
Yeah, well, so we've got obviously some with the noise, which is wicked. I'm so glad they asked
good
me
lads.
To join.
I love the noise, man.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I love it. They're fast become. I've only been part of the group for a couple of years, two and a half years, but they've you know, fast become my best friends in the world, really. But like you, our plans are we're meant to be touring in October. We were touring as this happened, and then we stopped that obviously, and all of our spring gigs and early summer gigs got moved to October. Now we're meant to be gigging and doing that tour in October, and at the moment our sort of strategy is just let's see what venues say. The trouble is that nobody really knows, but we're in a very fortunate position in terms of being an improvised comedy group is that we don't have to write anything. So if tomorrow a venue calls us and goes, hey, can you do a show, then the answer is yes, we can just get in the car and go and do it. So I think what we're sort of thinking is like we'll see how what the lay of the land is in October, in August, and then take a view for those tour dates. And then if we have to push them back into 2021, that's what we'll do. But I guess,
yeah.
And just like everybody, you know, the financial situation becomes more and more dire by the minute. But there's nothing to be done. Like,
no, that's it. That's all you can do. I mean, I'm looking at going to uni. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. And then
that's great, man. To do what?
Still, psychology. I've never been to uni before, and I just thought, why not? You know, so become a mature student at 48. You know, just to see how we go.
Just but you're the best. You're the best dressed 48-year-old going, mate. You'll absolutely fit in at university.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. But what about you personally? What are your plans now that you know what's going on with your body? Are you just taking that day by day? Are you just?
Yeah, I'm waiting for a crash. I think I'm going to have. I'm yet to have, so the attacks are called relapses, and I'm yet to have a really serious relapse. I was chatting when I went for my medication on the first occasion, I was chatting to another lady who was in the room with me. It's a bit like a chemo ward, I would imagine. Like there's 15 people sitting around having their drugs. We all have a natter. It's quite nice. And I was chatting to this lady and she was like, oh, how did you know? And so I described my symptoms to her and she was like, oh, okay, so not too severe then. And I was like, I don't know. Until that point, I'd never met anybody with MS before. And so I said to her, like, you know, what happened to you when you started? And she said that when her first relapse, she went blind for 3 months.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, well, okay. I've so far been incredibly lucky then. And I've just got to, a lot of the MS advice from sort of people who've had it for many, many years is just live day by day. Don't think about what you can't do and what you won't be able to do. Think about what you can do.
Brilliant.
And right now I can do absolutely everything. And as long as that remains the case, I will keep doing everything. I'm not going to say no to anything. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to gig as much as I can. I'm going to travel. I've got things I want to do with my family, things I want to do with my girlfriend. You know, like I want to live that life because in 10 years time, I might not be able to. And if in 10 years time I can't, then I'll turn my hand to something else. I think the biggest worry this is probably the case with everybody in comedy and indeed every freelancer in the world is like, I have something hanging over me now where I know at some point I won't be as capable as I am now. It's not a case of like, that's almost certainly that I will have a problem. And I suppose you worry about like, how will I support myself? How will I support my family? How will I earn? And my partner's just been amazing. She's been like, you don't have MS, we have MS. And yeah, and so, you know, if I develop into a point where I'm really, really unwell, then we'll fight together. And I don't know what I'd have done without having her around, really. It's been, yeah.
That's amazing, man. That's really amazing. I'm really pleased that you've got people around you to look after you, because I've got to say, you're a top dude.
And thanks,
I was genuinely saddened when you told me what had gone on. So
yeah,
I'm glad you've got people around you.
Yeah, that process, because like obviously you found out because I've been organising an MS benefit gig, which won't be happening. I don't know when it's going now, but it won't be then, I doubt, because Comedia won't be open. But the response of my colleagues, because I don't know, like I've only been in live comedy for a few years in this form, but to a person, every single person I text or emailed got back to me immediately saying yes, or saying I can't do that one, but if you ever do another one, let me know and I will definitely be on the bill. And that's the second hardest I've cried since getting MS, was just the kindness of everybody. Like, I don't know, the industry, it feels like the industry came together, and like I don't know everybody that well, but everybody was like, oh, willing to help. And I just made me feel like I just so touched that people were willing to help in that way.
That's lovely. That's so lovely. Yeah. And going back to that, if and when it does happen, count me in. I'll be there, man.
Oh yeah. I'm going to have a big party as well. It's going to be called Fuck MS Party. And it's just going to be, we're going to rent out a room in a Brighton pub and get on the lash. You know, people can stay at mine, you know, all that sort of stuff.
I am well up for that. And it sounds, we'll get you blind and incapacitated, ironically.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah. If I can't walk home, then it's just a taste of what's to come.
So this is what it'll be like. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Help me up, guys. Help me up. Robin, this has been lovely. Where can we find you on the socials?
On the socials, my individual stuff is at Orange Next Door for my Twitter. And I've got Instagram as well, which I think is just RJ Hatcher. I'm not 100% certain. But more importantly, you can find The Noise Next Door at Noise Next Door on everything. And come and see us again when we're out. Go and see everybody. Go to live comedy when this is over, guys. We really need it.
please, for the love of
please.
God.
I don't want to beg, but I will. I will.
Absolutely, I will. Robin, thank you so much, mate. This is
pleasure, Rich. Thanks for having me, man.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.